Michelle, you ready?
All right, good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. I'll make one agenda note before we get started, and that is immediately before consideration of claims, we're going to get strictly an update from our county engineer who had to close a bridge yesterday, and it's really important that not only the supervisors but the public is aware of what's going on there. Since it's not on our agenda, the board can't discuss it, we can't take any action, we can't do anything like that, so it will be strictly an update, and we'll try to get that done as we get into the agenda. So note that that will be different than what you see in front of you. With that, if everybody please honor America, join us in honoring America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, first item, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of proclamation declaring the week of November 19th, 2017 as National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. We got Carla Webb, Kathy Johnson, and Brett McLean here to talk with us. Come on up.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us today. We're here for the proclamation, and we also wanted to share some information about an event that's taking place tomorrow. It's a Soup of Soup event, and Kathy and Brett are both part of the Story County Housing Board, and so they've been involved with this event for the past few years. So I brought them along today so they could talk about what's taking place tomorrow.
Outstanding.
Do you want to do the proclamation, or do you want us to go into the event?
Why don't we talk about the event first, and then we'll get to the proclamation as we wrap it up.
All right. Tomorrow morning, from 11:30 to 1:30, we are having the annual Scoop of Soup event. Members of the Ames City Council will be scooping up soup for members of the community. The event is our way of raising awareness, shining that light on the issues of hunger and homelessness in our county. We know that they are there. This is going to take place at the corner of Lincoln Way and Grand, the Hy-Vee parking lot.
Sure.
Right there. There is an area, and we are going to have tables set up. The agencies in town that help with hunger and homelessness issues are all going to be represented there and have people who can answer questions, give out information, talk about resources for folks. So we want people to come. Anybody can come, get a bowl of soup, see the agencies that are out there to help get some information and help show your support for what the county is doing for hunger and homelessness issues.
Outstanding. And a big thank you to the Ames City Council for being willing and able to get there and scoop soup.
Yeah.
We hope for a good day tomorrow. Something to just bring to you about homeless veterans. Any night in America, 39,455 veterans are homeless.
Say that again.
39,455. Any given night across America. I mean, just kind of let that number sink in a little bit. But, you know, as you drive around the county and you see nice houses and we have a good-looking university, and just to think that we have people that are homeless and hungry in our county, you know. And they're not the typical person that you think of, a long-haired person with a beard living underneath the bridge. They're living in cars. They're families. There's kids. And we've done a few homeless stand-downs in the county, and we've seen families to it. And so it's kind of neat that we can bring this awareness that this is really happening around us, that people are hungry and this time of the year and homeless.
Well, definitely necessary. Absolutely.
Yeah,
really appreciative that you guys are shining a light on it. Carla, do you want to read the proclamation, or do you want me to?
Well, I have your name in there for part of it. Okay. You want me to read part of it?
However you want to do it, we'll do it.
I'm going to make a motion later that we change it to we, the Board of Supervisors,
sure,
since it's all three of us.
Sure, absolutely.
So, just a second.
This is Story County, Iowa Proclamation, National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. Whereas for the past 20-plus years, the National Coalition for the Homeless and the National Student Campaign Against Hunger and Homelessness have sponsored National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. And whereas the purpose of the proclamation is to educate the public about the many reasons people are hungry and homeless, including the shortage of affordable housing in Story County for very low-income residents, and to encourage support for homeless assistance service providers, as well as community service opportunities for students and school service organizations. And whereas there are many organizations committed to sheltering and providing supportive services, as well as meals and food supplies to the homeless, which include Assault Care Center, extending shelter and support, Access, Ames Community School District, Emergency Residence Project, Food at First, Good Neighbor, Mid-Iowa Community Action, MICA, Story County Community Services, the Hunger Collaboration, the Salvation Army, Veterans Affairs, Youth and Shelter Services, YSS. Whereas the focus of National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week 2017 is resolve to fight poverty, and whereas Story County recognizes that hunger and homelessness continues to be a serious problem for many individuals and families in Story County, and whereas the intent of National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week is consistent with the commitment and dedication of the members of the Story County Housing Coordinating Board to educate the community and to provide the needed services and support to citizens who suffer from hunger and homelessness circumstances.
Therefore, we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim November 11th through 19th, 2017 as National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. On behalf of our community, we encourage all citizens to recognize that many people do not have housing and need support from citizens and private/public nonprofit service entities. And if approved, it will be signed this 14th day of November 2017. That sound right to you?
Sounds right to me.
Okay.
I would move that we accept this with the red provisions or the changes, and we authorize our board chair, Rick Sanders, to sign the proclamation.
I would second that. So, note for the audience, I simply changed a couple words around to make it we, the Board of Supervisors, instead of I, Rick Sanders, Chair of the Board of Supervisors, as it was written. So that's the edit we've made in the motion and the second. Further discussion?
Done.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
It passes as read. Anything to add? Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for the work that you guys do. You're welcome.
Next item is consideration of Resolution 1860 Appropriations Amendment. Lisa Martin.
Good morning, Lisa Martin.
Good morning.
Old Lisa Martin.
What do you need?
We're at that time of year where we're wanting to appropriate some more of the budgeted dollars. This week I brought forth an appropriations amendment that for elected officials, the engineer's office and IRBM, I'm doing an additional 50%, so it's 100% of their budget is appropriated. For the rest of the departments, it's an additional 45%, so that's in the 95% area is what's appropriated for those departments.
Yeah, and so just to be clear for everybody, the way the Board of Supervisors has chosen to allocate funds, so once we budget it, it does not become available to spend. We have to appropriate it in order for our different offices and departments to be able to spend it. What we've been doing the last few years is immediately at the beginning of the fiscal year, on July 1st, we've been appropriating 50% to everybody. So 50% of what we budgeted becomes available to them. And then we get to about this point of the year, and we go ahead and we appropriate additional dollars. And what Lisa just told us is, for our elected officials, we go ahead and appropriate the full additional 50%. So 100% of the dollars that we budgeted are now available to all our elected officials to spend as they deem appropriate statutorily in their offices. We also did the same thing with IRBM because they traditionally need those dollars at this point in the year to be able to do it. And was there somebody else we were going to
call? Engineer's office.
Engineer's office, because Darren has a whole lot
going on,
and he is bound by multiple not only the county, he's bound by DOT and the state and how he does things. Everybody else, we only appropriate an additional 45%, taking them to about 95%, meaning that we have some flexibility in our budget late in the year just to see how things are going, and we traditionally use that. Anything you would add just for clarity on all this? Board, questions, comments, or a motion?
I would move. Resolution 1860 as presented, and I would have to say on a historical basis, I think this has served the county well, and this is just another, you know, as you do this job, you learn how things were done in the past, and I think that we put ourselves in better fiscal standing to make the dollar distributions when things come to us out of the blue.
I agree. I would second.
All right, we have a motion and a second on resolution 1860, which is an appropriations amendment. Any further discussion?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1860 passes as presented. Thanks, Lisa. All right. Now we're going to do the update from Darren Moon that I spoke of earlier. Darren, you had to close a bridge.
Shelly, can you hit the lights for me? Thanks.
And while Shelly's hitting the lights, I'm going to remind the board one more time, tread really lightly here since this is not an agenda item.
Yes, strictly an update here. Just happened yesterday afternoon, but there's a lot of indications that come out of this closure, so I want to make sure the board's aware of what's going on here. This is 180th Skunk River, south of Ames, by the Ames Water Pollution Control Facility. This is the bridge that heads out to their facility. I got a call from them, and they said the ag traffic damaged the bridge, and so we got out there. It had dropped about 6 inches on this corner. Difficult to see here, but this is the cap that supports the whole bridge, and it's sticking up there. It's the reason for it. The cap here, it's completely collapsed through the cap. The cap broke. You can see the cap sticking up out there. It's supposed to be a flap of this here. So the again, a unique bridge for us. The bearing is on four corners. Usually it's loaded all the way across the cap. This is just point loads on the two ends. It's a very long bridge, so all loading is right here. That's a concern for me because it's no longer supported on the piling that go into the ground. It's supported on the ground, which is essentially straight up and down. So that's very concerning to me. It's not made to support that type of load. So we immediately closed it yesterday afternoon. This is the other end of the bridge, and it already has issues with the cap, but there is all kinds of fill that heads out in a flatter slope. So this showed up in the bridge inspection report this past year. So the bridge had a lot more issues than just what we discovered yesterday. Unfortunately, pretty good reason to believe it was damaged due to overloading. I've seen it happen myself. There's some properties to the west of this bridge that take heavily loaded grain semis over this bridge, and they should not be doing it. This bridge was never designed to take those kind of loads, so even if we did these repairs, it still would not be allowed to take those heavy semis over it. But I've seen them do it, and that's what Ames commented. They saw him doing it again yesterday. That's a picture of the bridge itself. To give you an idea, it's an almost 200-foot long bridge, two-span. Ames Pollution Facilities back here. And this is where we get into some of the uniqueness about this bridge. Just quickly, this is from the last bridge inspection report. There was the abutment cap was crushed under the southwest bearing. That is the one on the west side that we knew about. There was a short comment at east abutment, piles are rotting. So we knew about that, we're keeping an eye on it, but we did not expect the cap to break like it did. So that was due to overloading, not necessarily decay of the bridge. So it was a surprise. Here's the uniqueness of the bridge. The bridge is right here, heads back to the Ames facility. County road curves around, this is I-35, and the county road stops right here. This is a private road City of Ames owns. I'm not sure when they got put in, but it gave them an alternate access to get up to here. So all this land you see here is currently landlocked with the bridge closure. we're going to start talking to the City of Ames to see what we can do to get these properties accessed through their private lane. I don't know how the discussions are going to go. We might offer up some snow removal services for them or something, but for the most part, this doesn't get accessed during winter anyway. It's just ag ground, and I believe I didn't see any crops that were still in, so I think all the crops are out. But long term, I don't see a good, quick, easy fix for the bridge. And like I mentioned, even if we did fix it, it still has the load issues for the ag community. I'm going to meet with our bridge inspector out there hopefully sometime this week. I get a second opinion from them on the closure and if they have any repair recommendations. But the difficulty here is that it's so steep. We did a repair on the other end probably 30 years ago that required them to put a steel beam under there for extra support, but it sticks out this direction. We have no room to work here, and we can't really build that out. It's in a drainage area over 100 square miles, so anything we do takes a DNR permit, along with our floodplain regulations, doesn't allow us to fill out here any further. So we're in really tight constraints here to do any type of repairs, but I'll see if our bridge consultant has any other ideas to get a repair option. I'll get you some costs on that, but...
What's the traffic count?
Last traffic count we had on that bridge.
Well, that's 60 is what the DOT count is, and that's mostly to get to the plant, but they can access the plant through their roads.
Well, you closed that bridge temporarily not too long ago.
We had a little wood bridge. There's two little wood bridges on this stretch as well, and we had that one collapsed as well, and so we had to put some pipes in there, so it was closed for a while during the summer.
Okay.
I would ask the chair that when this comes back before us, if maybe legal could also weigh in about any ability we might have if we were able to determine who violated the load limit. I mean, because we're talking about a major expense here to...
Yeah, so I agree with that. I think we're in a position now, Lawrence, where it is all hands on deck. It's a staff issue until it can come to the board for action. As soon as it can come to the board for us to have a formal conversation where we give direction,
right,
and we actually deliberate, will be the 28th. I'm going to ask that we get it on the agenda for the 28th, just wherever you get between now and then. And really appreciate the update today. I'm going to cut us off here because anything we do more than this, we're going to be skirting that line of what's appropriate. I'm just going to ask, well, we're fortunate to have you, Darren. Keep doing what you do as our county engineer.
I will just finish real quick with, if you get the question on how soon could this be replaced, if you had the money, we're talking $1.5 million to replace the bridge. If you decide to go that route, we're at least 2 years out because it's a DNR. It takes a DNR permit since it's over 100 square miles. That permit alone can be a year to get at times, and the bridge has to be designed before you need to submit the permit. So this isn't a quick replacement type of issue.
Not a quick replacement. Those are the kinds of things that need to come to the board on the 28th when you come back, along with any options that you come up with between now and then for us to work on. With that, I won't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Thank you. Good. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
Consideration of claims for November 16th.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes? We've got both the October 31st and November 7th minutes.
Move consideration of the minutes as presented.
I would second.
Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions as listed, board.
As presented.
Second.
Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye.
Consent agenda.
I would like to pull items 2 and 3, so I would move passage of the consent agenda as presented with the exception of items 2 and 3.
And 2 is a service agreement between DARPRO Solutions in Story County, and 3 is a service agreement between Kappa Delta and Story County for 2 deputies for 3 hours. That's the 2 you want?
Correct.
All right. Motion, Chief. You willing to second that?
Yes.
All right. Consent agenda with 2 items pulled. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. All right, we're going right to consideration of service agreement between DARPRO Solutions and Story County for the removal of used cooking oil, effective upon signature for initial term of 36 months. We got Barry and John here to talk to us about this. Oh, perfect. And Laura, you wanted it pulled, so have at it.
Sure. This contract caught my attention because we are not paying any money for them to come out and haul away our used cooking oil. So that got my attention, so I actually read the fine print. And I had a question about why is it, I believe I understood from Section 2 in the contract, why we were not being charged. It has to do with how he disposes of it and tries to make money on disposal of our vendor. But the second question I had was about Section 9, which says that this is a confidential agreement according to proprietary information. And so I reached out to the county attorney and copied in the Sheriff's Department yesterday on this, and just asked how do we do this and why. And at that point, I'll be quiet and just ask Ethan, I suppose, to speak about it.
Yeah, thank you. John, I had a conference call with the sales rep, Chris Peterson, discussing the basis for having that in the contract. And for him, it was a competition issue. Mm-hmm. He didn't want somebody else coming in and giving a different quote. Right now, his quote is $0. So that's based upon the nature of his business operation. So the nature of his business operation, he collects the used cooking oil grease and sells it for cents per pound. Now, if somebody comes in and wants to pay us 10 cents more per pound, that's what he's worried about, somebody coming in and swooping in on his contract. Now, this contract is going to cost us nothing, but he's got to make money too. So he gets paid when he removes the grease, and it costs us nothing for him to remove it. So that's what the benefit the county receives. Now, as far as confidentiality goes, we spoke with him. He's okay with whatever language we want to include in there. And so a compromise we discussed was including language that says, unless required by law or court of competent jurisdiction.
Which is already implied.
It's already implied that the contract provision wouldn't be enforceable because the state code provision saying that we would have to disclose that under Chapter 20. So I don't think, I don't anticipate him taking any enforcement action on that contract provision. If he did, of course, it would interpret it as void anyway because of state law.
So you've offered a solution he's agreeable to, because I was wondering if we could just strike Section 9. But if there's a solution that's agreeable, I'm fine with it. I just was stuck there with it being a confidential contract.
I think a fair solution is right at the end of that paragraph, we just add, comma, unless required by law or court of competent jurisdiction. Then we will disclose. And he's happy with that. We're happy with that.
Okay.
A good catch.
Good. Any other questions on this? So this is cooking oil that we have to dispose of.
Yeah, you can't put it in the trash.
Right.
Picked up, and they do. It's based on commodity that they sell, so what is market price. So if it would swing, we're all of a sudden getting 50 cents, then they would actually probably pay us a little bit of money for it. Or if it swing the other way, where they're only making 15 cents a pound on it, then they would come back and they would actually charge us a little bit for it. So it could go either way, but for the last 5 years, he said it's been sitting between 20 and 25 cents per pound. So it's been pretty steady the last 5 years.
Okay.
I would make a motion that we approve this contract with the addition at the end of Section 9 to be stated by our county attorney.
I second that.
We've got a motion and a second. Ethan, I'll make an assumption that if this passes, you'll get it added, and we'll have the board chair sign after, assuming it passes, after you add what you want to add.
Sounds great.
Loris, good with that?
I am.
All right.
With that. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes pending the addition of language. Thanks, Dan.
I think we got
the Kappa Delta and Story County for November 3rd, $65 each for two deputies, 3 hours.
I pulled this contract because it is providing service on November 3rd. It was signed by Delta Kappa representative on November 3rd, which was the day of providing the service. was not signed by anybody at the sheriff's office until November 6th, and it's coming to us on November 14th. And we're, if I understand the arrangement correctly, or the law, the legal process correctly, is we're supposed to be approving these before they put in force. And I know this sounds picky, but I do get worried. A couple have come before us. So I did reach out to the sheriff's department. I emailed Professor, or I'm
sheriff's office.
The sheriff's office actually emailed the sheriff and just said, am I missing something here? Is this actually standard operating procedure for the board to sign contracts after the fact? And if so, can we put it in some kind of formal policy? Or is there some way that we could have them come to us before in this particular situation? Because I think the sheriff's department knew in advance that they would be out providing coverage for this event. I'm getting increasingly uncomfortable approving contracts after the fact when we're the legal entity on the hook.
Barry, you want to take that?
So, I asked for some direction from the board. We were contacted on October 31st by the sorority wanting this help with this event. So they had the event at Prairie Moon Winery, and this is the first time we've had these issues, but Prairie Moon Winery will not allow them to have their event without law enforcement presence. But they wait until the last second to contact us. And so then we are in a quandary of, do we do it or not? And so we go ahead, we want to be good partners back. We try to educate them that we need to know further in advance, because obviously it's a long process to get everything for you guys in a timely manner. And so what we do is we make the decision. We're going to go ahead and provide the service.
Sure.
We'll come back to you guys. If you don't want to sign the contract, we'll give them the money back.
Right.
Because we're in a quandary. And we understand full well if you guys aren't comfortable with signing the contract, we give them the services to those people.
Which is strictly in the sheriff's purview as an elected official to determine if he's going to provide that service or not. And you guys and the sheriff have always seemed to err on the side of providing the service, having personnel there. And so for me, Lars, it's just come down to this is the way we can actually legally collect the dollars for the service. Service has already been provided.
Mm-hmm, right.
And now we're just trying to clean it up. Ethan, am I missing this from a legal perspective?
No, that's correct.
I do know there are some different Attorney General opinions and guidance on what sheriff's deputies can do in their overtime or off time. I'm not sure how that enters into this discussion, but procedurally, the procedural discussion is appropriate. Yes, what you're saying is appropriate.
Well, but we don't have the authority, and I think rightly, don't have the authority to meddle in the services that the sheriff, as an elected official, decides to provide.
That's correct. So long as the sheriff is following the law as it pertains
correct.
To deputies in giving their time or services to other entities. I think there's potential legal issues there that would need to be explored, but I'm sure the sheriff has already done due diligence on that. I'm confident of that. But, yeah, procedurally, I don't see an issue with approving this contract. It's the proper way to do it to make sure we get reimbursed.
I appreciate that explanation, because the last time one came before, it was literally a same-day request from ISU police to use the shooting range, and I had talked to Connie about that. So this is helpful for me to know why we are actually being presented with this. It's not really a legal liability situation. It's not a jurisdictional, internally situation. This is just so we can get paid after the fact.
Yeah, and just for clarification, Lars, that was USDA that came to us last night.
Okay.
And because our partners, our community partners, we try to educate them. USDA was a new player that came on board. They didn't understand all the nuances. We have educated them. We hopefully won't have that problem moving forward. Also with this, we've reached out to the fraternities and the sororities and said we need to know further in advance, because we don't want to put you guys in that position either. We would just as soon have the contract in front of you, but it's creating, I'm going to tell you, it's not worth the $300-some that we have collected, all the headaches that this event here has caused us. But the bottom line is that we're trying to generate the revenues when we can, when it's appropriate, and so we'll continue to try to get them in front of you beforehand, but there may be times when we can't, and if you guys aren't willing to sign, that's your guys' call, not ours.
Sure, but then it becomes on the back of taxpayers to provide these. The services are getting provided, right? Because that's how Story County does things. That's how the Story County Sheriff does things, and I believe rightly. So the question is, are we going to have taxpayers split the bill, or are we going to have the entity that's actually using the services split the bill? Even though it's only $300, I mean, Barry, you've been around me enough to know I worry about the $50.
I understand. So my point, though, is at the sheriff's office, so my folks, because they have to hurry and catch up on all this stuff because of the last minute that we get to know, it's a real pain in, I'm not sure what I could say legally, but it's a real pain.
Right. To deal with. Well, and so I appreciate Laura's having a question and bringing it forward. I think this is a necessary mode of operation if we're going to continue to collect dollars when situations come up like this, because we're not going to educate everybody who's going to find out, oh, you know, I need somebody on November 3rd, and I reach out on October 31st, and there's not time for us to get done.
Would it be possible when something like this comes, if we could get a really brief memo telling us kind of the situation? I like to document, you know, I'm big on documenting things. Would that be possible, just to send a one- or two-paragraph memo?
It would be hard for me to discern when I should be exactly doing that. This is fairly commonplace for us, these things coming up last minute. And I, again, trying to utilize my hours the best possibly that I can.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to come over here and explain, then that's part of it. And hopefully during the course of time, we'll, you know, we'll all get on the same page as far as what takes place and how we should be doing things and how you guys see things. But it would be hard for me to know what things I should be sending a memo over for and what things I should not.
If we're being asked to sign a contract that the service has been provided, that's what caught me, okay, was this service was provided and then we were asked to sign a contract approving the service. So, and as far as you coming over, I appreciate you coming over today. You know, my communication to Paul was just, I was going to pull it, tell you guys I made a contact with the sheriff and go on from there. So thank you for showing up, you know, on both of these. But, so that's why what I'm saying, just a memo saying, we got contacted at last minute on this, you know, and therefore that is why the contract's not presented prior to the event. So that would be a pretty clear line.
Yeah, I mean, so... I mean, let's see if we can find the happy medium here. Mm-hmm. So, Barry, understand, there is no way this board is going to ask from a from the sheriff's office that the sheriff run past the board of supervisors his internal operations, and that means you and everybody else. That's
right.
Not even close.
Right.
But when something's going to come before us, it's probably reasonable and prudent that when it's added to the agenda, just an email with a little blurb, hey, this is going to be on the consent agenda, here's why it's on the consent agenda, and it may alleviate some of this, and maybe Connie could, anytime one of these gets added, just have that little email to the three of us just saying, hey, this is on here, this is why.
Yeah, you know, we can certainly do that. I'm just
okay.
I'm worried about my staff putting extra work on them. That's not going to, we may even just CC. So when we get an email on the 31st that says, can you provide service this Friday? Maybe we'll just CC you guys when we first send out our response to them so you know that it's in
that
the
works.
Loop.
Yeah, just
so. Yeah, but please don't take it as any of us, Laura's included, we're asking you to run by us some service you guys are providing.
Yeah, no, and I don't gather that at all. And we want to be informative to you guys. We want to make sure, I think that you guys have known, and those of you that have been on the board for a while, I think would back this up. We sometimes go overboard with the information we provide you guys, because we want to be good providers of information to you guys. We want you to know where we're coming from. We want to be transparent. We want to work with you guys on all the things we're doing. We just want to do so as effectively and as efficiently as we possibly can.
Well, and so in my 8 years here, you and Sheriff Fitzgerald have gone above and beyond in every single instance in that regard when it comes to county business. So I appreciate the note, and it absolutely happens. Laura, will you make a motion, please?
I will. I make a motion that we approve this as presented, item 9.
Number 3.
Yep.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that gets us to public hearing items. First consideration of Ordinance 267, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, Iowa, and for Resolution 1858, CQC Future Land Use Map Amendment. And we are, board, going to deal with both of these in one fell swoop after the presentation.
Yep.
Good morning.
Good morning. So this is rezoning 08-17. The Robinson rezoning request. It is on 3 subject properties located in the unincorporated village of Bernald. You, the Board of Supervisors, are the applicant. The property owner is Ray and Sandra Robinson. Ray is here today.
So moving into some background on this request, again, there are three subject properties in the rezoning request. Two have buildings on them that are part of RR Metalworks, which is a welding shop. One has the welding shop septic system lateral on it. The current property owner began his welding business in 1979 in this location. He operates 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. about Monday through Friday, except when he travels for work. And activities including modifications and fabrication to agriculture and truck equipment. This area in Fernald, the central blocks in Fernald, was zoned in 1958 with the adoption of zoning commercial. There are several houses in the area, and so in 1997, the county initiated a rezoning to residential with the exception of these three subject properties. However, expressly, yes. I have a copy of it here, too, in case you want to see that. But in 2004, we found an official zoning map showing the three subject properties zoned residential. There was no records of other rezonings taking place. There's no records of it being an error either. And the last zoning map showing it as zoned commercial after that 1997 rezoning of the adjacent area was in 2002. So that's a two-year time frame where we're not sure how that changed. And so we're here today. The property owner inquired in August about making improvements to the building built in the 1900s. We had a conceptual review where we discussed the rezoning process after we found it was zoned residential. The Board of Supervisors received a letter from the property owner expressing his dissatisfaction in the process and the current zoning as residential. So we contacted Ethan Anderson with the county attorney's office to confirm the process for supervisors initiated rezoning. And then on October 10th, you applied for the rezoning and directed us to place it on the Planning and Zoning Commission agenda. The November 1st Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, the commission recommended approval of the request. And the request includes, again, these three properties. They're hard to see with all the lot lines right here, so south of Richland, east of Winchester. Again, they're zoned R1 residential. This area, you can see, it is west of this commercial cluster in Fernald. About in a half mile, there's 3.8% of land is commercial. That's about all this area. So it would be in the central area of Fernald, it would be a commercial area that's kind of separate from other commercial areas. However, we can see on the future land use map here that it, under our C2C plan, is designated to continue as a commercial area, the two subject properties with the welding shops at least. We do have an amendment request to our C2C plan that is part of this for the third southernmost subject property. That is designated in our C2C plan as rural residential. That is likely because the commercial use of the property was not evident when we create C2C plan future land use map. There's a septic system lateral on it that's related to the commercial use, but just looking at that, you wouldn't know.
Uh-huh.
And so the Planning and Zoning Commission also recommended approval of that C2C plan future land use change, as that third parcel is necessary for the commercial operation on the other two parcels, and those other two parcels are designated to continue as commercial areas in Fernald under our C2C plan. So these are some photos of the site. This is an aerial photo looking south. You can see the two buildings here. And then the applicant, the property owner was adjacent to the buildings as well. This is looking east onto Richland Street and southeast onto the welding shop. This is the 1900s welding shop where the owner wishes to make improvements to the exterior, maybe make some supports on the interior. This is the newer welding shop, another image of that. And you can kind of see here to the south, this is the other subject property where you have the propane tank and the septic system lateral. This is looking north onto the subject properties. And this is looking west onto the residential properties across Winchester. There are five standards of approvals for rezoning. Only three are applicable in this instance.
So the first one is that the rezoning shall conform to our C2C plan. I know we've already kind of discussed this, but C2C plan does designate those two properties as future land use of commercial industrial. So there is an amendment request for that third subject property. We feel it's necessary for the commercial use of those properties, the continued commercial use, because the subject system laterals are located on it. We are also looking at the designations here in the C2C plan of commercial industrial, their intent, the principles related to those. For the commercial industrial designation, the intent is to allow for future demand for types of commercial and industrial growth that may be best located in a rural setting. We found that the welding shop does serve as agricultural equipment, and this does provide a commercial area in Fernald, which is one of our unincorporated villages, so it meets the intent of that C2C plan designation. The C2C plan also shows Fernald as a rural village area, and rural villages are, in the C2C plan, described as areas characterized by a variety of land uses, and we find that even though there is a cluster of commercial areas to the west, this would represent one of those unique land uses that are unique to our rural villages in Story County. And it also meets Principle 1 of the rural village areas to continue to promote improvements and reinvestment in this area. And that is exactly what this rezoning request is getting at, being able to make improvements to the buildings and continue that commercial use. The second standard of approval is that the rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district. The statement of intent is to accommodate a full range of retail, commercial service, and products, and this includes manufacturing and fabricating, which is what takes place at the business. The intended uses are generally characterized by a minimum of obnoxious characteristics that might adversely affect surrounding development. And so regarding that last point on the intent of the zoning district, there is grinding and cutting that takes place at the welding shop that could be a noise level that's louder than other noise levels in a residential neighborhood. The property owner does live adjacent to the welding shop, I will point out, and he relayed that he's never received a complaint from his neighbors. We looked at our records and don't have any complaints on file either. And we, again, want to point out that this will allow for improvement of the building and may represent an improvement and a reinvestment in the community as a whole, as it is located at that main intersection in Fernald. And the third standard of approval is that the proposed rezoning is compatible with surrounding land uses. So again, while this is a commercial area located inside of a residential area, it has been historically zoned commercial and has been used for the welding shop since 1979. It's a part of the community here. So moving on to comments from the interagency review team and from the public. We routed this for interagency review on the 20th. We posted a development proposed sign on the site on that day as well. We sent letters to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting and this meeting. Also have done legal notices published in 3 newspapers for this meeting and the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. We did receive one comment from an adjacent property owner across Winchester in support prior to the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting and in support prior to this meeting. The comment prior to this meeting included a request for you to waive the second and third consideration. So moving into the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, they recommended approval of the rezoning request and the C2C future land use map amendment. They had questions about the Board of Supervisors initiated process, and they wanted to confirm that no complaints had been received at the meeting, but that was generally the discussion. And so the property owner did speak at that meeting to reiterate his desire to continue the commercial use of the welding shop, but no other members of the public spoke on the request. The Planning and Zoning Commission did consider several points of analysis, including that the subject properties were part of the originally commercially zoned center in Fernald. The welding shop has operated for many years in that location. The intent of the rezoning is to allow improvements The two subject properties are designated commercial industrial in our C2C plan, which does meet match with a commercial light industrial zoning. The rezoning would allow for the continued use of a commercial node in Fernald. Again, the 1997 rezoning of the area to residential accepted these subject properties. We have no records of additional rezonings, but an official map did show the area as residential later on in 2004. And finally, there is a C2C plan amendment, but we feel that is necessary to support the continued commercial use given that there's septic system laterals and propane tanks located on that southernmost property. So your alternatives, and the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended alternative one, which is approval of the rezoning request from the R1 Transitional Residential District to the Commercial Light Industrial District and the C2C Future Land Use Map Amendment from the Rural Residential Area to the Commercial Industrial Area for only that southernmost parcel as put forth in case REZ 08-17 on first consideration and set second consideration for Tuesday, November 28, 2017. Your other alternatives are approval with conditions. That would be alternative two. Alternative three is denial, and alternative four is remand. Questions?
So I've got a comment, and first of all, so appreciative of the time and energy that you guys have spent on this. This has been really, really frustrating for me to deal with. So we got a letter, or I guess on my desk, we got a letter from Mr. Robinson on October 2nd, I believe, and I'm going to read just the last paragraph because I think he hits it head on with the last paragraph. And to lead up to this paragraph, he talks about how he was really careful. He bought a piece of property that was clearly commercial. He fought for it to remain commercial. In 1997, he was promised that it was still commercial. And then all of a sudden, unbeknownst to him, with no notice, the color on the map changes, and it's not commercial anymore. And he says, the longer and more I think about this, the madder I get. I should not have to attend any meeting to get back something that should not have been changed in the first place. Please take care of this for me, and if I have to attend a meeting, let me know when. Well, clearly this is the second meeting you've had to attend. So I took this, and I immediately went downstairs and visited with you guys, and we got to exploring this. And for me, this is simply somewhere along the line between 2002 and 2004, somebody in Story County made a mistake and colored a piece of property that was very clearly intended to be commercial, expressly stated to be commercial. They changed the color on the map or just didn't notice that they were making a mistake. And now, being that we're government, we got to go through this convoluted. I mean, here we are, we're the middle of November, and still trying to get the end of it. It's nothing against you guys. You guys are doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing and following our process and procedures. But it is really, really frustrating to me that we got a citizen that's having to go through this for something that never should have been here, and we seem to be dragging it out. I hope that we can deal with this as quickly as possible and get him on his way so he doesn't have to deal with this anymore. Any other comments before we open the public hearing?
None. I guess I share the frustration. I know, Ray, you've done work for me. And it would you think it's just like it was an error that was done in haste or for whatever reason that what do we have before us today? We're trying to fix a county error. It's not anything you did. It's something that our county, our predecessors, for whatever reason did. Sorry for becoming part of the civics project that we have to take on ourselves. Frankly, I'd be like to talk about something else than this, but we are going to move to fix this, I suspect.
Laura, say anything before we go to public hearing?
I agree with what both of my peers have said. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'll just note that there's nobody still here in planning and development that was here. And I don't even know that this happened in planning and development. This could be a simple, it's a fairly easy mistake to see how it could happen. It's just been eye-opening to me how hard it is to undo something that I think we all feel really clearly was just a mistake. But yet we've got to go through this whole process to undo it. With that, I'm going to open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address Ordinance 267 and Resolution 1858. Come up to the microphone if you'd like to address anything. Ray, you want to come up and tell us off? Come up and tell us off. If you don't, we'll just sit there. All right. Seeing no one moving, I'm going to close the public hearing. So generally, board, I'm against waiving second reading. There are times I like waiving third reading. This is one of those cases where if whoever, whichever one of you makes this motion, if you're willing to waive the next two and Ethan's okay with it, I think we get this one done and be finished with it today, if at all possible.
I would take you up on that, and I would move consideration of Ordinance 267, amending the certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, and for Resolution 1858, from our C2C Future Land Use Amendment, as presented, waiving our second and third considerations.
I would second that.
Super. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Jerry, anything to add?
Amelia did a great job. Nothing.
You guys all did a great job. Yeah. From the moment I walked down there to just say, what the heck's going on, you did a great job. You led us through the process.
Thanks to Ethan.
I mean, you know, it's not easy to undo mistakes sometimes. I hope that's where we're getting today. Our apologies to you, Ray. You should not have had to go through any of this, and we're sorry that you did, and hopefully we're at the end of it.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
No.
Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So that passes Ordinance 267 and Resolution 1858. It waives second and third reading. It is done.
Thank you, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you for your patience.
I will say, on a personal edification, reading through this, that I did not realize the gym in front of all of us in that corner. Subject property served as a gymnasium when a school was located in Pernal.
The front portion of my building was a gymnasium. Part of the problem is that they cut away the floor, put concrete down lower. That's why they need to reinforce the building.
That explains that.
Well, good. Let us know if you ever run into any other troubles. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item, and we're still in public hearing items, consideration of Resolution 1850 to enter into a sale agreement for purchase of county property, certain real property in Ziering, Iowa, for $18,883. Ethan and Mike.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good
morning.
This is very exciting. In my notes, I've got that I had a conference call on January 24th. 2017 with Mike Cox. Talk about getting a piece of property. Now, I'm sure Mike has worked on it since before that, but we went through a long process here. We initially explored doing a quiet title because there is a piece of property here outside Ziering that appears to be in ownership limbo. So we're going to do a quiet title action, which is a very time-consuming process to get the property in our name. And researching that and getting ready to provide service on the surrounding property owners. The Union Pacific asserted an ownership claim, which made our quiet title action untenable. So now we're able to negotiate a purchase with them, and that's what we have before the board today, is that purchase agreement. A couple of things for the board that are curious about this agreement. It's a standard Union Pacific agreement that they have, and it has all these different environmental and other disclaimers that they're not going to take any ownership, they're not going to take any liability, everything's on us. What they do give us is a 60-day feasibility review period, and that begins today if you approve the agreement. So we are going to, Mike and I, are going to move quickly to see what we can determine and discover on this property in the next 60 days. If we don't discover anything, we'll keep moving forward, but if we do discover something, we'll bring it to the board's attention.
Okay.
If we don't discover anything, closing is set in the agreement on or about January 31st, 2018. So if we don't discover anything in the next 60 days, we hope we get this closed.
Okay.
And might have the next step moving forward, constructing the bike trail.
No, that's a good summary. I think you guys are aware of the process that we've been through, and we received grant money and have had some county funds to move ahead and construct a bike trail to connect an existing trail through the city of Ziering and up to Dakin's Lake, and have been I guess, stymied a bit, to say the least, by this issue. And so we have tacit approval with some other landowners that we need for easements to move this forward, but this was what was holding us all back for... It predates Ethan and I's meeting by a fair amount, and so I really appreciate Ethan's support in helping us move this forward and to get us to where we are today. We ask that you'd give this favorable consideration in moving forward so that we can make that trail improvement in Zeering.
Outstanding. Board, any questions before we open the public hearing?
I hope we get fortunate and you guys come back with negative, but with a railroad that I believe, you know, at some point, Mike, I knew the day when they stopped operations there, but, you know, it's a railroad and who knows what got thrown on the ground. So.
Okay, good. Laura, anything before we open the public hearing?
No, just right. Although the number of disclaimers in that thing was quite impressive.
Union Pacific Railroad, man, they are impressive in making things harder than they need to do sometimes. With that, we'll open the public hearing and see if anyone would like to address Resolution 1850, which deals with Story County purchasing property headed into Zeering, Iowa, along the Prairie Rail Trail. Anybody? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action.
I would move resolution number 1850, authorizing the purchase of property in Zeering, Iowa for the amount of $18,883, and authorize the signature upon the sale agreement and all other necessary documentation to effectuate the purchase by the chairman of the Board of Supervisors.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Peter.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. 1850 passes, and we'll see if we find anything on or in the ground in the next 30 days that we don't like.
Thank you.
That takes us to additional items. Consideration of awarding lowest bid for Story County Secondary Road building improvements to Jensen Builders for $1,033,400. Darren Boone.
Okay, as you mentioned, we have a bid opening on October 31st. Jensen Builders were the low bidder. That's the amount you just said, which was about $200,000 less than our estimate, so we felt the prices were good. So I would recommend award to Jensen Builders.
And this takes care of two outbuildings, or this, right, this awards the bid for the construction of two outbuildings, one down on the Kelly Corner and the other in the town of Roland, replacing an existing building. The one in Kelly, the intent is for it to replace a building that we had abandoned and actually given to Slater several years ago that was not suitable for today's equipment. And then we've got an outbuilding in Ames that is not as functional as we'd like it to be. We'd like the one in Kelly to replace that one as well. That's where we're trying to get to. Gone through all the architectural work, put it out for bid. Bids came in 2 weeks ago, and now we're to the point we're ready to award the bid. Good? Laura, Marty, anything to add?
No, but once again, we have had a very good 2017 for all the bids that I can recall that we've let in open. We have been under in all of them, so... good for the Story County taxpayers. And I would move consideration of awarding the lowest bid for Story County Secondary Roads Building Improvements to Jensen Builders Limited for $1,033,400.
I would second.
Got a motion and a second. Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The bid is awarded to Jensen Builders. Now, since the bid has been awarded, we got a consideration of a contract with Jensen Builders. Amazingly enough, for $1,033,400. To build said buildings.
I'd recommend the approval of the contract, or recommend or approve the contract for Jensen Builders. They are wanting to start as soon as possible, so that's why we've had signed contracts in our hand already.
I would move that we approve the document agreements identified as A101 and A201 as presented.
Second.
Further discussion, board?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. That enters the county into a contract with Jensen Builders to build the new secondary roads building. Darren, anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Next item on our agenda is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1862. Is it Schnurr Farm Subdivision?
I believe so. Yep.
All right. Sure. Boy, this is planning and development day.
Yeah.
Morning, Emily.
Morning. So this is an agricultural subdivision request, simply to allow the property owners to convey a farm field in its current configuration. And it'll be easy to understand in just a second here. This is the Schnurr Farm Subdivision, second edition. It's in Section 22 of Richland Township, on the south side of 270th Street and about a quarter mile east of 720th Avenue. The applicant is Mary Titus, and the property owner is Schnurr Farms. So this property is located in New Albany Township, about 3.5 miles southeast of Colo. The subject property is currently zoned A1, and it is completely surrounded by agricultural zoning. Within a half mile of the property, there are 7 dwellings, but there are plenty of large agricultural parcels that are greater than 35 acres in size, which in Story County is the minimum lot size in the Inman District for a single-family dwelling. Here's the subject property. There are 3 dwellings to the northeast here, and then a farmstead to the northwest. There is some floodplain on the property, but again, this is an agricultural subdivision. It's not intended for development. The plan is to continue to farm the property. So this is the proposed division. This little piece in the corner is proposed outlot C, and then the rest of it will remain as is proposed outlot D. There are 2 agricultural accessory structures on proposed outlot D that will remain. The purpose of dividing off outlot C is to enable this approximately 5-acre parcel area farm field to be conveyed as one piece. So proposed outlot C is just under half of a net acre, and proposed outlot D is 36.06 net acres. This is looking west along 270th Street from that larger proposed outlot D. Looking north, as you can see, a lot of farm fields nearby. This is looking east along 270th Street. And here's looking northeast at the dwelling near the subject property. This is looking east from the proposed outlot D, looking south at the farmland, northwest of the agricultural accessory structures that will remain on proposed outlot D. This is looking southeast. This area here is the larger proposed outlot D, and then this is proposed outlot C up in the corner there. This is looking southwest. This area here, again, just under a half of an acre, is proposed outlot C. And they're proposing the division so that this farm field can be conveyed as one. Here's looking at the parcel between the trees here and the road is the parcel that they're looking to be able to transfer together. Agricultural subdivisions plats are intended for agricultural use. There's no development lots included. No land set apart for new streets, alleys, parks, dedicated open space, school property, or public use lies wholly within the A1 or A2 districts. I would say the interagency review comment highlights are the original proposed subdivision name is very similar to the Schnurr Farms subdivision first edition. So it was just proposed that they just make that the second edition for clarification. Again, the floodplain manager indicated there's floodplain on the property, but again, there's no development proposed. Planning and development just had some basic questions about the purpose of the division, And if there are any new access points being proposed, there are not any, and no restrictive covenants. We did send notification letters to property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed subdivision on November 7th. We have not received any comments. Points to consider when looking at this proposed subdivision to create the two outlots for agricultural use. The primary goal, again, is to convey outlot C with the parcel to the west to get that 5-acre farm field in one piece. The subdivision does meet all the requirements and standards for agricultural subdivisions and will be used for agricultural purposes. And looking in the larger context, so Schnur Farms does own over 500 acres of cropland in that area. So your alternatives today, staff is recommending approval of Resolution 1862, the agricultural subdivision plat Schnur Farms subdivision, second edition, as put forth in SUB 1917. Any questions?
None.
Good presentation. Once again, well documented. Always like the photos. Pretty piece of land in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. All right, if there's no questions, I entertain a motion.
Move Resolution 1862, the Schnur Farm Subdivision, second edition, as presented.
Thank you. Yeah, good job.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
1862 passes. Thanks. Next is discussion and consideration on the request for proposals for architectural engineering services for building improvements associated with the location of the Crisis Stabilization Transitional Living Center Program. Deb Shildroth.
Morning, Deb.
Hi, Deb.
Boy, today feels like a day of items that we have been working on for years,
yeah,
trying to get to the end of. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. This is pretty exciting. A couple of weeks ago, the board approved a letter that we submitted to Optimum Life Services for consideration on ending the lease that they have with the group home on Hazel in Ames. They're currently using that as a residential care facility, and the region in Story County and Mary Greeley Medical Center are working on a program that will offer crisis stabilization services and transitional living services at this Hazel location. So we continue to be in contact with Optime about that. They're fully aware of the plans. We have a draft of a plan from Mary Greeley as to how they would roll out those services, and the region is taking a look at that. On the county's end, we are looking at remodeling that facility on Hazel to make it more conducive to the crisis stabilization and transitional living services. So Leanne Harder and I worked together on the draft of this RFP. It has a pretty aggressive timeline, as you may have noticed in the timeline section of the document. But we want to be able to try and get these services up and operational by July 1st of 2018. This RFP is very similar to the one that we did for the animal control shelter in terms of having the architect do the planning work and then the bidding work, but bringing all of that information to the board at each step of the process so you're fully aware of what's going on with the building. Any questions or?
Yeah, so I'd just make a comment. This is especially with the timeline we got, this is going to be a pretty steep climb. We got four major player entities involved in this. Clearly, Story County is our building. It's going to remain our building. You got Mary Greeley as the proposed provider of the services, trying to make sure that they get a building that's suitable to those services they want to provide. You got the City of Ames that is highly interested and I think would be the major utilizer of any of these services that are put together. And then you got Optime as the current tenant of the building, trying to figure out, and then I've almost forgot, and then the region's involved because they're going to be the funder of these kind of services. So we've got a lot of moving parts here. It's important that we stay on task, and this is step one of about a 19-step process that we've got to go through in order to actually be able to provide the services on July 1st of 2018. Questions for Deb?
I think we've slow-walked ourselves into this, and now it's to hurry up and get going. portion. It was nice to hear from the region that they made innovations that they may be interested in helping defray some of the expenses on the reconfiguration too, as they're looking to have to expend dollars from their budget in taking account Senate File 504. So we might be in a position where we move this transition this facility at less dollars than we suspected going in.
Less general dollars. Yes.
My concern is at the front end with only 3 days for anybody to respond to the RFP. That doesn't allow a lot for competitiveness. I understand as we go through the criteria we're interested in that we make preference may be given to a vendor located within Story County, and there are certainly several vendors there, but 3 days, is that really enough notice for someone to respond to this type of RFP?
They had until November 30th.
Okay, let me see.
The
mandatory site visit. I should have looked at my actual screen first. Okay, the mandatory site visit. So they basically have 3 days to decide whether they're going to go ahead and go bid on this or not, because it's a mandatory site visit.
Well, that doesn't mean that they're absolutely going to bid on it. It means they have interest. And I think we want to get some kind of architectural firm that understands that these kind of deadlines happen. I'll be surprised if we don't have multiple entities that at least take the site visit. And then once they do the site visit, whether they'll bid on it or not by the 30th, that's a different question. But I think this is how the world works, at least in the real world. There aren't many commercial enterprises that move at the same pace of government. They move a lot more like this.
Yes.
But I appreciate your point, and we want to make sure that it's as wide open, but we got to try to stay on our timeline.
So why was let's go to the mandatory site visit here. Why was that selected just 3 days after we put this bid out, which today is the putting the bid out?
Yes. So we took a few things into consideration. One, the holiday that's coming up upon us. And we need to be flexible with Optimate and the client schedule. And Friday afternoon seemed to be the best time to be able to offer those tours. That's when we went in for tours with Mary Grilly, and they wanted to look at whether or not the group home was what they were going to need to provide the service. So we're trying to keep the client's needs in mind as we're allowing outside entities and individuals to come in and take a look. And I did talk to Optimay about the 17th, and they were fine with that because most clients are going to be gone that particular day for programming or other things that are going on.
And the other thing I just want to clarify here, there is a section that talks about that the consultants agrees that the hourly fee and mileage expense will be the consultant's sole compensation. But I brought this up before in contracts about some architectural engineering contracts, then they try to add on a surcharge for any third-party purchases. And I don't know that there'd be a lot in this contract, like for office supplies or whatever, but I would prefer that we see that we not end up with a final agreement that shows there's like a 10 or 15% surcharge for somebody picking up the phone at their end and ordering office supplies or something like that. So that would be maybe...
But we would deal with that when the proposal comes in and then ultimately when a contract is drafted.
Right. Yeah. For that, I just believe mentioning that now
sure.
is right up front.
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely. Okay,
thank you.
Any other questions?
Done.
All right, I sure take a motion.
Move consideration of the request for proposals for architectural engineering services for the building improvements associated with our location of the crisis stabilization and our TLC program, as presented by Deb Soldroff.
I'll second.
A motion and a second. Discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Request for proposal is ready to go out. We'll get it out today, right?
Aye.
Thank you. Next is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1861, Friedrich Land Development, Friedrich and Sons, and the City of Ames Urban Fringe Plan Amendment. And is Jerry still here?
Or is Jerry here?
Two hours sleep.
Starting to feel that 2 hours sleep. That's right.
Oof.
Good morning again.
Okay, as you said, this is a Ames River Fringe Plan Map Amendment request. The applicants are here today, Kurt Friedrich and Charlie Kuster from the City of Ames Planning Staff. I also believe the mayor from the City of Gilbert is here and some other interested individuals in this topic. The request is Friedrich Land Development Company and R. Friedrich & Sons requesting the Ames River Fringe Plan Map Amendment. Mr. Friedrich purchased about 100 acres south of Cameron School Road, west of George Washington Carver, North Ames. The current designation in the plan is priority transitional residential. It does include some natural areas in the southwest portion. We'll show you what that looks like in a minute. And he's requesting to go to urban residential area, which in the agreement, if you're in an urban residential area, you're permitted to be annexed to go through that process. He's proposing to do single family, multifamily, also requesting a commercial node at that intersection. It would be more convenience commercial type uses. Kurt can certainly talk about that, but at the Planning and Zoning Commission, he attended and indicated that he envisions like banking, convenience commercial, gas, pharmacy, coffee shop, those kinds of things that would probably primarily provide services to a neighborhood. In addition to this request is the request that's added by the City of Ames. It includes the Borgmeyer Trust property, which is on the east side of George Washington Carver. It's about 147 acres. Also included would be the Ames Golf and Country Club to the north and the Irons residential subdivision. You've got the single family and the bi-attached homes. In addition to that are five separate single family dwelling parcels. There's a retention basin from an existing subdivision that's located in the City of Ames, and then the railroad right-of-way, which those two things are located east of the Borgmeyer properties. So the change that's being requested is the current designation is priority transitional residential for the Borgmeyer and the residential properties. And then the Irons is rural transitional residential. The golf course is considered Parks and Rec, and I think it's the only Parks and Rec designation in the plan. And then the request is to go to urban residential so that these areas can be annexed. So past action history, on May 9, the Ames City Council supported Mr. Friedrich's request to submit the Ames Urban Fringe Plan Map Amendment. Ames Planning and Housing staff did consult with our department June 9. On the 20th, the Board of Supervisors did support Mr. Friedrich's request to submit the Ames Urban Fringe Map Amendment. And again, to just accept the application, it takes two of the entities, two of the three, to accept the application. It requires all three to make any changes to the map. On the 18th, the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission recommended to support the requested amendment, both Mr. Friedrich's request as well as the City of Ames's request, adding the additional properties, including the commercial node at that intersection.
But now that decision's been set aside.
Well, that was approved, and then there was an issue with the process that the city staff went through, and they've corrected that. So now this is going back to their Planning and Zoning Commission on the 15th of this month, and then Ames City Council on the 28th.
Right, but the way they corrected it is they set aside any actions, right? So you're telling us what happened, but now it didn't formally happen from Ames.
Planning and Zoning Commission did take that.
Absolutely, but as I understand it, the action has to be redone, right? Since I think the meeting wasn't noticed properly, if I'm not mistaken.
The publication didn't take place. So they corrected that, and then so this will be heard this month, and then it'll go before the City Council on the 28th. The Story County Planning and Zoning Commission did address the request, both requests on the 1st. They supported it with a vote of 4-3. Again, both requests, Mr. Friedrich's property, as well as what the City of Ames is requesting, with the commercial node, with the condition that a traffic study occur prior to development of the property. At that Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, there were a couple of residences that participated in the discussion. One
owned a rental property. It was one of the single-family homes. He had some concerns about increases in valuation of the property, expressed concern about the timing of installing traffic improvements. He opted for, I thought that they should occur sooner than later, and then just had general concerns about traffic in general and what this might do to increase the traffic. Another property owner who lives further to the south thought the topic really should be that we need affordable housing, and then also raised concerns about the current traffic and then what this project would do with traffic levels in the area.
Can you give me, from your perspective, so the 4-3 vote, what were the concerns from your perspective? What were the concerns of the three that did not support this on our planning and zoning commission?
It was primarily the impact of traffic. A couple of these commissioners do live in this area, so they're familiar with the traffic levels. And seeing the possible projections of future dwellings, you know, what that might do to the existing levels. And then also there was some questions about fire service response times, and Charlie did attend that meeting and provided some information about that. The city's guideline is they like to be able to, 85% of their calls that I could have a 5-minute response time. And then he mentioned that throughout the year, the fire and the police department, they keep note of response times, and during budget time, they try to make plans for future improvements, that type of thing.
Okay, thank you.
We also received an email from the city of Gilbert, the mayor, four main areas. We did provide this information to the board. First question is, how will the township be compensated due to the loss of tax revenue from the for the township cemetery board and the fire department? Will Ames be adding a fire station, staff, police force due to this request? I know Charlie's here, he can speak to this, but the city is looking at potential locations for a new station, but I'm going to let him talk about the details on that. Will the developer or development contribute to paying for police, fire, staff, equipment, and the station? And the last question is, if the area is annexed, will it be difficult for the township fire department to get to areas that may become islands that are not annexed? And under state law, the cities can't go through the annexation process where there's remnants left that would create islands. And I think the area maybe that they're referring to is the Hyde area.
Right.
We've got the development, Auburn Trail, that went through the annexation process this summer, went to the city development board, that actually got thrown out.
It's one of the first I've ever heard of.
Got thrown out on a boundary issue. But again, the city won't be able to go, they're not allowed to go through that process if they're going to create an island. Okay.
I'm getting confused about this. So I followed the emails from Mayor Pop, and John, I'm so appreciative that you're here today. So as I understand our urban fringe plan, Gilbert has the same right to weigh into this as Story County has. And so my confusion is, if the city of Gilbert has these concerns, it seems to me the city of Gilbert has a mechanism to try to address these concerns. And so I'm just confused as to how that has become a county issue that's on our, is it an FYI or is it that, I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, and actually some of this information was provided to us at the quad meeting that we had at the city of Gilbert last Thursday. That's when I first heard about some of the concerns with regard to the fire, township fire department.
But the township fire department won't be responsible if this area were ever annexed by a municipality. The municipality becomes responsible for it, right?
That would be the city of Ames' plan to take care of the police and fire for the area that gets annexed. So this just shows you the area that's encompassing the proposed amendment. Everything in yellow that's crosshatched would be included. You've got the three Friedrich properties. Again, it's about 100 acres south of Camden School Road, west of George Washington Carver. There are three single-family parcels. There's two here, and then one on the east side of the road. The Borgmeyer properties, about 147 acres, currently in ag production. And you've got the Ames Golf and Country Club to the north, and then the Irons on the east side of George Washington Carver. There's also three lots along 190th Street. And then also included is this retention basin. It's part of Northridge Heights Homeowners Association, and then the railroad right-of-way. So all this would be included in the proposed map amendment.
Right. Which does not, should not be confused with automatically triggering annexation. In fact, you could not, by law, just annex the areas you have hashtagged because of the area over there to the east, that high area that is not currently in the city of Ames. That would create an island, and it would be illegal to annex what you're showing us in the hashed area. So this is just a map amendment in how, what designation this property would have.
Correct.
I'd like to, so kind of following up on that, though, as we go through the different layers, it's my understanding the county's opportunity to give a voice, to have an actual say with some weight to it, this is it. Because the next step after we change the map, then we are, we only have a secondary role if the city decides to annex, correct? So this is where we actually, if we have preferences, if we ask the developer, if we put conditions on this is where we do it correctly, because we don't have a true power, if you will, or an equal standing. That's a better word to use. We don't have equal standing. If it goes to annexation, Ames takes the lead, correct?
We, Story County has always been involved, as well as Gilbert has been involved, in the review of the annexation petitions. You know, we get invited to the consultations with city staff, the city council at Gilbert, the board of supervisors. We have that review authority, because what we'll be doing is putting together a resolution to deny it, to support it, or to take no action on it. So,
right.
So really, from now until before the annexation, there's time for input and discussion. And again, this is a map amendment. There are a lot of pieces, and I'm glad Charlie's here to talk about the annexation part of it, because you know, the Borgmeyer property is a big part of this. I think, from what I hear from staff, is they're content with the current agricultural use of this right now. So they, whether or not they're interested in annexing, you know, I don't know.
I'd like to return to my question and make it very crystal clear. A resolution to support or not support or take no action is not, however, a prohibitive, does not prohibit Ames from proceeding forward on an annexation, correct? For either Story County or Gilbert, we could both vote, get far down the process, and for some reason decide we don't like it, all right? But our resolution to not support does not stop any forward annexation action. This is where, if we were to ask for concessions or changes from the developer, or say to the developer, this is not something we think is good. And I'm not saying any of those things, but I'm looking at process here. This is where we have equal input, that the true triumph trio, we are all on equal footing, correct, Jerry?
Yeah, I don't think state law requires that the other two entities support the annexation before
correct.
They proceed
okay.
to the next step.
Okay. Thank you for just clarifying.
Yeah, and the only thing I would think I would clarify is I think this is a point. I don't think this is the point where Story County has more or less impact. I mean, clearly, if we get to the point that something is annexed, then it becomes squarely the city's purview what they do with it. But let me just say this about the urban fringe plan, because I was around for the discussions and ultimately the implementation of the Ames Urban, what we call the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And I'm looking back at Leanne. Leanne, it was a 7-year process to get us to something that was finally approved.
Ten
years, Mayor Pop says. And The reality of the process, the reality of what the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is, as I see it, and Jerry, you correct me if I'm wrong here, it is supposed to clarify what the future vision of the use of a piece of property is within these three entities' sphere of influence. And it's supposed to lay out for developers and others exactly, based on that designation, exactly what entity you're supposed to deal with. It was never intended, as I see it, to be a static document. It was intended to be something that evolved over time. And if you look at things, we've had this evolution all the way through. We've had Cameron Estates. We've had the Irons is a good example. We see these changes happen. And for us as a county to try to say, well, things should be static, I think we're going down a pathway that would lead to the dissolution of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and I think that would be a huge, because any party can opt out, right? Any party can opt out of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan.
There's a process for that.
But and I think that is a dangerous direction to go for any of the three entities, just knowing how hard it was. We're not ever going to put something like that back again.
I also was there covering it from the very, very early days, okay? So, I remember so much emphasis being on it, on being the developers being tired of having to bounce from one entity's requirements and meeting one entity's documentation, specifications, et cetera, to another one. So that was very clearly a reason for it, too. I also think we may have jumped ahead a point. I'm not saying that I've not weighed in on whether we should change it or not. I just want to make it very clear that if we want to, I'm thinking more about conditions, okay, about other concerns, right? Whether it be what are we going to do about traffic in that area, or some of the concerns that have been raised by the people in the township and the fire department who are, we may be their closest elected representation on that.